You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom, first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is Monday, and I'll be doing another short show because I do have an appointment Monday that I have to be at. And I got a little late start because I have some work that I was trying to finish up. What's in the news today is yesterday evening, for the third time in his 7 years as President of the United States, the President spoke to the people of America from the Oval Office. Now, normally when presidents do that, they're sitting down at their desk. And for those that are new to the show, the way you listen to the show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K-P-O-P-S, .wordpress.com. And below my picture, you'll have links to the most recent shows. And if you want my notes, more information, and you usually do, you need to click on the More button. And if you do, you're going to see a photograph of the president at the podium, but in the Oval Office, which is a little bit unusual, but whatever. And it looks like he had a teleprompter. I'm not sure of that, but it most likely he did, because he's fairly good at reading speeches. He's not very good when it's open-ended, especially when there are questions, because he tends to go on and on and on. Now, I've listened to the entire presentation. It's about 13 minutes, I think a little under 13 minutes, so it's not long. I'm not going to play the entire speech because there's not much of news in the entire speech. And frankly, what I found offensive was towards the very end when he lectured the American people about don't you dare go after the Muslims. This is after a terrorist attack by Muslims. Now, I'm going to discuss it, but I want to first set it up by telling you a little bit what I'm not going to play, and you can go listen to the entire speech if you want, because I have it there. I also have the text. What he's trying to do is use either mass shootings, where you have four or more people killed, or a terrorist attack, and for the first time he admitted it's a terrorist attack. That's somewhat of progress, not much, but some progress. But the American people knew that. He wasn't telling us anything that we didn't know. Namely, 14 people were killed in San Bernardino, and 21 were injured, about a dozen of those people rather seriously. So the death number of people that died could actually go up. I hope it doesn't, but it could. But he's trying to use these shootings as an excuse to grab your guns. President Obama, as well as his former and Attorney General Eric Holder, and most likely his current one, are gun grabbers. They want to the best of their ability, get rid of the Second Amendment. Now, that's not going to happen, because the American people won't stand it, the representatives in Congress won't stand it, and the Senate won't stand it. My reaction to that is, Mr. President, keep on doing it. You're doing a very good job of destroying the chances of Democratic candidates in the next election. So if you want to go after the guns, keep it up, because it's not popular with the American people, because they appreciate their Second Amendment rights. And the only way to protect your family, your property, is you need to be armed. And American people are waking up to that fact, because all during this president's time in office, what has been happening in terms of gun sales? They've been skyrocketing. Ammunition and weapon sales in this country are going up, up, and up, thanks to this president making or articulating in his various messages that he's a gun grabber. If, believe you me, if he had the ability to take all your guns, he would jump at it. The problem is he knows he doesn't have the votes. He's not even close. He knew he didn't even have the votes when the Democrats control both the House and the Senate. So it's very much mission impossible, but that doesn't mean he's not going to try. And what he's going to do is use any terrorist attack as another excuse. Notice, it didn't stop the terrorists. More background checks are not the answer. They're not going to stop any of these mass shootings. Most of the weapons are bought legally. You see, you have two big categories here. You have a situation where you do have people that have mental problems. They're mentally disturbed. Many of them are seeking help, but are on medication. And the medication, unfortunately, and it does happen, causes them to become suicidal as well as homicidal. So they go on a shooting rampage, kill people, and ultimately commit suicide. And one of the common denominators, they're usually men, they're usually young, they're usually on medication, and they have psychological problems. And they usually get their guns legally, or they borrow them from their parents. So more gun laws are not, repeat, not going to do anything. He knows it. The Democrats know it. And California has one of the most rigorous gun control legislation on the books. The state's controlled by the Democrats. It has a Democratic governor. But it would not have stopped the terrorist attack because two of the rifles that were used were purchased legally by the shooters, the terrorists. Now, I did say the president made some progress. He actually said the T word, terrorist. But note, he's not putting Islamic and terrorist together. You see, this president, as well as George Bush, thinks that the religion, Islam, is the religion of peace. I don't believe it because I've done a lot of reading. I don't pretend to be an expert, but I've done a lot of reading on what motivates these people, and they're all Muslims, they're all believers, and the mainstream version of Islam supports them. They're on what's called a jihad. There's two major types. There's the greater jihad. Jihad means struggle, where you're trying to be a good person, a virtuous person, follow the religion faithfully. Then there's the lesser jihad, the militant jihad, and that's what terrorists are engaged in. And it's directed at Christians, infidels, and apostates. What I'm trying to say is the Islamic State, as well as Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups, are very much in the tradition and the religious doctrine of Islam. They are not the exception. They're mainstream. If anything, the exception are moderate Muslims. The president knows that, but he's perpetuating this lie, and that's what it is. He's not telling the American people the truth. They like what they're using now is the person got radicalized. Well, what radicalized him? It's the religion. They became very, very religious and took the words literally. Remember, it was in the 1600s, in the 600s that this religion was founded by Muhammad the prophet. And Muslims, there are over 1,600 million Muslims in the world today. It's estimated by 2050, there'll be over 2,800 million Muslims in the world. They're not all in the Middle East. Thank God they're not all in the Middle East. But most of the terrorist acts that we're seeing today are done by people that practice the faith of Islam. They're true believers, they're fundamentalists, many of them are Salafis or Salafists, and I don't have time, well, I might have a few minutes, but I really want to play some clips, my point is this, Islam is not the religion of peace, it's one of the most violent religions today, bar none, and the people that are mainstream are the jihadists, they are practicing their religion. And they're targeting Christians, infidels, people that practice other religions, and apostates, people that don't believe in their version of Islam. And yes, the primary victims are other Muslims. And that's because the Arabs are Sunni And the Shias are predominantly Persian, but you do have Shias in Iraq that are Arab. And the Shia and the Sunnis don't get along. While there have been many decades where there wasn't hostilities, now what we have in Iraq and Syria today is a religious sectarian war between the Sunnis and the Shia, the Arabs and the Persians. And you have both the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. The president said Al-Qaeda is not done, but in the past tense. It's not. Al-Qaeda is alive and well all throughout the world. It's not dead, folks. See, one of the games they play with the Al-Qaeda is you have core Al-Qaeda. Those were the original members that were responsible for 9-1-1. Well, I have news for the president. He knows this. There are many affiliates of Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is alive and well. It's like the mafia was and still is to a limited extent in the United States. They're in various cities. So Al-Qaeda is not done. It's not been destroyed. The Islamic State is not going to be destroyed. And it won't be destroyed until we have another president. Unfortunately, well, I'm not a Democrat or Republican, but it's going to take a Republican president to really go after the Islamic State. Now, I want to quickly say, I do partially agree with the president. I don't want to see combat troops, U.S. military, Army, Marines, namely divisions, back in Iraq and Syria. I think that would be a disaster. What I've said repeatedly in past shows, Islamic State needs to be destroyed by who? Armies that are Arab and Sunni, namely Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Turkey, Egypt. They need to get their act together and go into Syria and Iraq and destroy the Islamic State. That is going to take the leadership of the United States, and I don't see it happening, Mr. President. If anyone should take leadership on this, it's him, and where he likes to brag about the coalition of over 60 nations. I think it's up to 66. Well, that's right. That might be impressive, but where's the army? Where is the army that literally has to go in and destroy the Islamic State? It's not massing anywhere. I've seen no reports that we have Saudi divisions, Jordanian divisions, primarily, though, Turkey and Egypt. They have the most military personnel, and specifically army, that needs to go in. Yeah, the other nations can provide air support. The point I'm trying to make is, after the Islamic State is destroyed by Arab-Sunni armies, a coalition of those armies, then what needs to happen? In both Iraq and in Syria, people that live there, the Sunnis primarily, and it's going to take years, folks, very much years, they need to build an army. So we don't need to rely on Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, or Egypt to go back in a second time. They need to defend themselves against two, the Iranians and the Shia, and the Iraqi Shia that are Arab as well. That is what needs to happen. Where's the leader? I'm not seeing it. Nothing has really changed in his strategy, and it's not going to change because he's picked a side. Whether you know it or not, he's picked the side of Iran and the Shia, and that's why the Sunnis are not going to destroy the Islamic State. Not hard to understand. Why would the Islamic Republic of Iran want the Islamic State not to be destroyed but kept alive? Because it's causing instability throughout Iraq and Syria. What they absolutely do not want is an independent area of both Iraq and Syria controlled by Sunnis with a Sunni army that is under control. That, in other words, they're not led by a bunch of fanatics. And that's what the problem is. We have fanatics that are killing primarily other Muslims, both Sunni and Shia, as well as any Christians, Jews, or anyone with any other religion that they capture. That's what's going on. Now, I'm looking at the time. It looks like I'm not going to have much time. But I will play what I found offensive, and it's towards the very end. It's about the last 3 minutes of his
cast. Against one another by letting this fight be defined as a war between America and Islam. That, too, is what groups like ISIL want. ISIL does not speak for Islam. They are thugs and killers, part of a cult of death. And they account for a tiny fraction of more than a billion Muslims around the world, including millions of patriotic Muslim Americans who reject their hateful ideology. Moreover, the vast majority of terrorist victims around the world are Muslim. If we're to succeed in defeating terrorism, we must enlist Muslim communities as some of our strongest allies, rather than push them away through suspicion and hate. That does not mean denying the fact that an extremist ideology has spread within some Muslim communities. It's a real problem that Muslims must confront without excuse. Muslim leaders here and around the globe have to continue working with us to decisively and unequivocally reject the hateful ideology that groups like ISIL and Al-Qaeda promote, to speak out against not just acts of violence, but also those interpretations of Islam that are incompatible with the values of religious tolerance, mutual respect, and human dignity. But just as it is the responsibility of Muslims around the world to root out misguided ideas that lead to radicalization, it is the responsibility of all Americans, of every faith, to reject discrimination. It is our responsibility to reject religious tests on who we admit into this country. It's our responsibility to reject proposals that Muslim Americans should somehow be treated differently. Because when we travel down that road, we lose. That kind of divisiveness, that betrayal of our values, plays into the hands of groups like ISIL. Muslim Americans are our friends and our neighbors, our co-workers, our sports heroes. And yes, they are our men and women in uniform who are willing to die in defense of our country. We have to remember that. My fellow Americans, I am confident we will succeed in this mission because we are on the right side of history. We were founded upon a belief in human dignity, that no matter who you are or where you come from or what you look like or what religion you practice, you are equal in the eyes of God and equal in the eyes of the law. Even in this political season, even as we properly debate what steps I and future presidents must take to keep our country safe, let's make sure we never forget what makes us exceptional. Let's not forget that freedom is more powerful than fear. That we have always met challenges, whether war or depression, natural disasters or terrorist attacks, by coming together around our common ideals as one nation and one people. So long as we stay true to that tradition, I have no doubt that America will prevail. Thank you. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
A lot of what he said I agreed with. However, have you seen any news stories in your town, cities, of American citizens attacking, discriminating against Muslims? I haven't. I'm not saying you might have an incident. See, the American citizen is not the problem. The problem is Islam is a violent religion, and to the extent you have religious fanatics, fundamentalists, that take it literally, they are practicing mainstream Islam. And as far as treating people equally, I agree. But let me tell you, I'm sitting about 30 feet from a so-called meditation room on a college campus, a public college campus supported by the city of Dallas and the state of Texas. It is not a religious school. It's not a Catholic, a Baptist, a Methodist, Lutheran, Church of England, Episcopal. It's not. And for many, many years, we didn't have a meditation room. Now we have a meditation room. And guess who uses it? The Muslims, to pray 3 or 4 times a day. And yes, they use the restroom to clean their feet, their hands, wash their face and hair. What's wrong with that? They are being treated not equally, but as special. If you want to pray, go to your mosque. If you want to pray, go to your local church. But when you're on a public college, public colleges is another word, way to say government-sponsored university or college, there is no special treatment no matter what your religion is, period. It should be stopped. It's not going to be stopped. Oh, I've complained about it. Nothing happens because of political correctness. It should be closed down. It used to be an office. Now it isn't. It's been moved a couple of times, too. You see, the American people are very tolerant and accommodating. But in this instance, I don't think they should. Now, the president is a master of creating straw man. And the straw man was, well, you shouldn't be discriminating or attacking the Muslims. We're not, Mr. President. They're killing us, in case you haven't noticed. And we have the Attorney General threatening, although she's walked it back to a certain extent, prosecuting anyone that is critical of Muslims. Well, excuse me, we have free speech in this country. I thought in law school they still teach the Constitution and the Second Amendment. Maybe that's not the case. Now, I don't have time to play the whole thing, or I'll try to play a portion of this. What you need to listen to and watch is Robert Spencer. He is an expert on Islam, as well as the Islamic State. He knows what he's talking about. And let me play excerpts from a speech he gave, I believe, at the Ronald Reagan Ranch.
Thank you very much. There is a huge disagreement right now that you may be aware of between Barack Obama and Vladimir Putin of Russia. And Barack Obama says that the way to defeat the Islamic State, or ISIL as he calls it, and ISIS as everybody else calls it, is to remove Bashar Assad, the dictator of Syria, who now controls only a small portion of southern Syria at all anyway. And Putin says, on the contrary, the way to defeat the Islamic State is to keep Assad in power and fight against the Islamic State. How can we evaluate who is right? This question goes right back to another core disagreement that Obama and Putin have, and that is on the question of, is the Islamic State Islamic? You may have heard the president say that the Islamic State, or ISIL as he calls it, is neither Islamic nor a state. But the question, is the Islamic State Islamic, would be kind of like, is the Pope Catholic, were it not for the fact that he keeps saying that it isn't. And it matters so deeply, as is illustrated by the substance of his disagreement with Vladimir Putin. Because this is what's at stake. If the Islamic State is not Islamic, then what is it? It's got to be something else. It's got to be something. So what is it? Obama says it's a resistance movement against Bashar Assad. And so that makes sense of his whole position, that if it's just a resistance movement against Assad, if we take out Assad, then ISIS will melt away. If, on the other hand, the Islamic State is Islamic, then it might have a reach and a resonance far beyond whether Assad is in power or not. And so you see, your core assumptions, the kinds of conclusions that you come to, the kind of analysis that you use when you are looking at a problem, is going to make a very big difference in what kind of solution you're going to come to. And this is the core of the disagreement between Obama and Putin. One of them says the Islamic State has something very much to do with Islam, and so if Assad were gone, the Islamic State will keep going. And the other one says, no, the Islamic State has nothing to do with Islam, and so if Assad is gone, it will melt away into nothingness. Now, in the first place, when we try to determine who's right on this, we should look at what the Islamic State says about itself. And you may have noticed that I keep calling it the Islamic State. Why do I keep doing that? Because that's its name. The names ISIS and ISIL come from its old name that it discarded on June 29th, 2014. The words ISIL, I mean, the acronyms ISIL and ISIS stand for the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. The Levant is the area of the Eastern Mediterranean, comprising Lebanon, Israel, Jordan, and the surrounding areas, Syria. The word in Arabic for Levant is Shams, which obviously starts with an S. And so you get ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Shams, or the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. The president, for whatever reason, prefers the latter and calls it ISIL, ISIL, based on the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Those are the letters, ISIL. Everybody else calls it ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Shams. It's essentially the same thing. It's just whether you're translating that word Shams into English, which would be Levant, or not. However, also unspoken in all this is the fact that that is no longer the name of the group. The group changed its name to the Islamic State, period, full stop, nothing else, the Islamic State, on June 29th, 2014, when it proclaimed itself to be the new caliphate. Now, what's a caliphate? A caliphate is, in Islamic theology, in the understanding of the religion of Islam, the only legitimate government to which all Muslims worldwide owe allegiance. And on June 29th, 2014, the Islamic State said, we're it, we're the caliphate. There has not been a caliphate. There was always a caliphate throughout Islamic history up until 1924, when the last caliph was removed and the caliphate was abolished by the secular Turkish government. And for 90 years, there was no caliph and no caliphate. Now, 2014, June 29th, the Islamic State declares itself the new caliphate. Now, you understand, that's a momentous declaration, because what they're saying is that Muslims in France, in Germany, in Poland, in Russia, in the United States, in Canada, everywhere else, they do not owe any allegiance to the governments of their countries, as that also goes for Muslims in Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Kuwait, Egypt, wherever. They only owe allegiance to the Islamic State. It transcends all national allegiances, transcends all ethnic identities, everything. And so, did anybody buy this? Did anybody believe this? Well, as of the latest reports, 30,000 Muslims from around the world, 30,000, have traveled from whatever country they were in to Iraq and Syria to join the Islamic State. And now the Islamic State, or ISIS and ISIL, they control a territory larger than Great Britain, in which there are upwards of 8 million people. And so this is a considerable force, and people are buying it. People are taking seriously their claim to be the new caliphate. Why are they doing that? Well, one thing the people, the 30,000 people who have traveled to the Islamic State have in common is that they're all Muslims. And here again, this might seem to be, well, that's obvious, well, duh, but wait a minute. The president says the Islamic State is not Islamic. And not only the president, but the vice president, the secretary of state, the prime minister of Great Britain, the prime minister of France, every Western leader in every country in Western Europe and the United States and Canada, they all say ISIS has nothing to do with Islam. And yet 30,000 Muslims disagree and have traveled to Iraq and Syria to join it. The other thing we have to look at in order to answer this question of is the Islamic State Islamic, and thus to understand who is right, Putin or Obama, as to what we should do in Syria with Assad, is to look at what Islam actually teaches. And for that, I hope you all brought your Qurans. I have mine with me. I don't leave home without it. The Quran, of course, is the holy book of Islam. And the Islamic State often makes reference to it. You may recall seeing or hearing about, preferably hearing about, some of the beheading videos that the Islamic State put out, in which they would, with great technical skill, depict the beheadings of various people, some Western hostages, some Ethiopian Christians, some Libyan Christians, various others. And they would very graphically show the beheadings. The world was repulsed. The world was horrified. And even Al-Qaeda, another jihad terror group, had enough and said, you know, you guys are turning people off with this. You really should cut out the beheading videos. You're just alienating people and making them mad at you. Now, why on earth would the Islamic State want to do that? Why would they keep putting out these videos when they did horrify and disgust the world? The answer is in the Quran itself, chapter 47, verse 4. You can turn to it. Chapter 47, verse 4 says, when you meet the unbelievers, strike the necks. Strike the necks. Behead them. It's very clear. Chapter 8, verse 12 says the same thing, that Allah will send angels to strike the necks of the unbelievers. So when the Quran says this, and the Islamic State does it, and then there are Muslims who believe that the Quran is the perfect, unaltered, and unalterable word of Allah, the supreme and only God, then what kind of an effect is that going to have on them? Are they going to be shocked and horrified? No, they're not going to be shocked and horrified. They're going to think at last somebody is doing what the book says. Somebody is doing what the book tells us to do when we meet the unbelievers. Strike the necks. So this must be the authentic group. Another thing that the Islamic State does is persecute Christians. You may or may not have heard that when they took over Mosul, a very considerable city in Iraq, they painted the Nun on the doors or the walls of the homes of Christians. A nun is an Arabic letter, it's letter N, essentially, that is the first letter of the word Nazarene, which is the Quran's word for Christians. It calls the Christians Nazarenes all through the Quran, as in Jesus of Nazareth. And so when they were painting this letter N on the homes of the Christians, they were marking them for a particular reason. And that is because the Quran says, and this is chapter 9, verse 29, fight against those who do not obey Allah and His Messenger, and do not forbid what He has forbidden, even if they are of the people of the book, until they pay the jizya with willing submission and feel themselves subdued. Now, there's a lot in that, so let's stay on that for a minute. Fight against those who do not obey Allah and His Messenger, the Messenger being Muhammad, the Prophet of Islam, and do not forbid what He has forbidden, even if they are of the people of the book. The people of the book is the Quran's term for primarily Jews and Christians, because in the Quran's view, Jews and Christians and some others have received genuine revelations from God, but have dared to alter them to change the Islamic character of them. So you may not know, if you come from a Christian or Jewish background, that Moses and Noah and Abraham, as well as John the Baptist and Jesus, they were all Muslims, and they all taught Islam. And then their followers twisted and hijacked their teachings to create Judaism and Christianity. That is the mainstream Islamic view. So the Jews and Christians are considered people of the book. They've received a legitimate revelation, but they have to be punished for having altered it to stray from Islam. And so the way they're punished, the verse goes on. Even if they are of the people of the book, until they pay the jizya, jizya means tax in Arabic, with willing submission, and feel themselves subdued. And the jizya is a very particular tax, because in Islamic law, the Jews and Christians have to pay it, the people of the book have to pay it, the Muslims don't have to pay it. It's a special tax that is called the contract, that is the hallmark of what is called the contract of protection, or dimma, zumma. And the dimmi, the protected person, is getting a kind of protection like you may recall if you have ever seen the movie The Godfather or you've read about the mafia. You may recall the protection money that the mafia guys would come into a store and say, you know, you got a very nice establishment here and beautiful picture window on the front. And, you know, it would be terrible if somebody would come in here and break that window. And so, you know, you give us a couple $100 every week and we'll make sure it don't happen. Same kind of protection here. That they would pay this tax, the jizya, with willing submission and feel themselves subdued, the verse says. In other words, the tax itself is a sign of their submission. And then Islamic law mandated that they show their submission by accepting various humiliating and discriminatory regulations that denied them equal rights under the law. And then they would be protected. They would be allowed to practice their religions, but within these very, very clear limits. Some of the limits included that non-Muslims or the people of the book, the Jews and the Christians, they could not repair their houses of worship or build new ones. So their communities were in a perpetual state of decline. They could not hold authority over Muslims, so they could only hold the most menial jobs in society. Because if you can't be the boss, even in your tiny little shop, you know, with your nice picture window, then you're relegated to jobs where there is no boss or where you are always on the low end of the spectrum.
I have to stop it there. I was going to play another clip towards the end. I'll do that tomorrow. But for those that, if you go to proncpops.wordpress.com, that's proncpops, proncpops.wordpress.com, The video that I'm playing, you only hear the audio, is entitled Robert Spencer, the Islamic State. Now, I played this video for a reason. I played about 12 minutes. Because in that 12 minutes, you get a lot of information that most of the American people know little, if anything, about. I knew what he's talking about. He knows what he's talking about. The Islamic State is a state, and it's very much Islamic, no matter what the president says. What the president is telling you, as just as George Bush was telling you, is a lie. It's a lie. This is not a fringe organization. They're practicing their faith. And that's how it's perceived amongst the 1.6 billion Muslims of the world. And he lectures us about Americans not treating or discriminating against Muslims. Give me a break, Mr. President. Give me a break. So there was very little new in the president's speech. And he did spend, I think, too much time lecturing the American people. But go right ahead, Mr. President, because you're not winning points with anybody. The American people will not let you take their guns, and they're very tolerant of other religions, but they'll are insisting on leadership that you're not providing because you have an agenda that conflicts with the majority view of the American people. Now, tomorrow, I'll continue with Robert Spencer as to why the left in this country, and President Obama is on the left, tend to take the side of the Muslims. I'll close my show with America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com.